Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Before we introduce today's guest, I want to be sure that we thank our sponsor, OneCause. OneCause is the leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's 12-month recovery plan that we've been collaborating on for the last several weeks with several of our most trusted colleagues in the fundraising space. We are very grateful to Jennifer Harris, Andrew Olson, Teresa Lee, as well as our friends at OneCause and iWave for contributing to this plan. This resource is available to you for free. All you have to do is go to our website at www.responsivefundraising.com/recovery plan and download it. I will also be sure to include a link in the show notes. Now let's introduce today's guest. Good morning, Mario. Delighted to have you on the podcast with me this morning. We are starting bright and early on a Monday morning. It is warm, and I've got a hot cup of coffee, and I hope you do the same. Mario, before we tackle our big topic for the day, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Good morning. I have my coffee as well. My name is Mario Hicks. I'm VP for Financial Development for the YMCA Buffalo Niagara, nestled here in Western New York.
And Mario, how long have you been in fundraising? Is this a career thing for you, or how long you've been around?
Yeah. So I started with the Boy Scouts, actually back in 2012. And, you have a number of responsibilities, but really excelled and focused on fundraising. And decided to take that on as my focus, and moved into higher ed for a few years, and then felt the nonprofit bug and wanted to come back and serve the community, just based on my volunteer experience working with youth and families here in Western New York. I was a camp counselor for many years, and so I just really missed it a lot, and got this opportunity with the Y. So I've actually been with the Y now for almost a year.
So I think I have had plenty of guests, as you can imagine. I've had plenty of guests on here on the podcast from New York City, but I don't think I've had anyone on here from the other side of the state where you're at. I don't think I've ever had a guest from the western side of New York. So what's different about it to raise money over there rather than perhaps in the city in New York?
We're the city of good neighbors. And, I think, just based on our industries here, Buffalo specifically has been kind of on an upswing in the last, 5 to 7 years, and you've seen significant investment in the area, which has brought new business opportunities here in the area. So kind of you've seen a growth maybe on the corporate side, as far as development goes. I think we're more similar to, I would say, a Detroit or a Pittsburgh on kind of the depth of wealth here. It's a lot of old money. And that's kind of how we go about things, probably, as opposed to a New York City and their development efforts.
Yeah. So, Mario, given the it looks like you've got some thoughts about the pandemic and sort of where fundraising finds itself. So what's the big, bold opinion you've got for us today?
I don't know if it's a you know, something that probably a lot of tenured folks don't already know, but I think post pandemic, we're going to see a significant amount of collaboration, possibly even more funder driven for us to just partner anymore. I think the competition side of it, for funding is going to need to be slowed down a bit post pandemic, especially I think with the idea that maybe some doors may not open after this happens, which is unfortunate. But those missions are very important. How we serve our communities are going to be important. And I think the best way to go about that is to partner even more.
So where are you sort of seeing that? Do you have an example of where that's sort of playing out for you all? Or is the YMCA sort of already taking the initiative to see some of this collaborative? Because I think we sort of saw, I remember after September 11th and after the 2008, after the recession or during the recession, I saw a sort of an encouragement of, it wasn't so much collaboration, but it was the, I remember the narrative really playing out a lot. This was perhaps after September 11th and sort of the economic downturn that resulted there, sort of mergers and acquisitions.
Yes.
The idea of sort of it was actually more of a, to use another big C word, it was more of consolidation.
Yes. So
where do you see collaboration for an organization like yours really starting to play out, perhaps?
Yeah, so I think it actually starts, and we've seen this already here in our area, is kind of with a lot of these foundations and major donors coming together to do an immediate response to their local community due to COVID. And then now you're starting to see those pools of money that they're basically reaching back out to a lot of nonprofits and saying, what's the big idea? And if, as long as you have this big idea, do you have other nonprofits that you're partnering with? Do you have a potential, it's basically kind of that private, public sector nonprofit partnership that these funders are looking for. So how can you get the city involved? How can you get other nonprofits involved? And what businesses can you bring to the table for your big idea? And that's what's currently happening here. They're looking for a request for proposal or a request for ideas at the moment from basically a major COVID fund that's been built here in Western New York. And so I think that in itself is kind of the catalyst for that, not to just be a short-term sort of thing, but to be a catalyst for long-term trends and sustainability for these big ideas, and it starts, I think, currently with COVID, but what happens after the pandemic, it needs to continue. It's a bit of a long-winded answer.
I tend to see these because I've been sort of privy or been a part of, or even in some ways initiated these sorts of conversations myself when I was working for the last organization I worked for. Do you think that these things tend to be more advantageous for the sector when they're facilitated or initiated by the charities or by the donors? Or do you think that even matters?
I think it does matter. I think your hand is forced when it's funder driven. Because they have the dollars that you want for your mission, and so. I would like to see a bit more proactive side, which I think probably can be challenging, whether it's bandwidth or focus or leadership, to kind of, take it the other direction and be proactive in the sense, how can we partner and make a larger impact? I think you've seen that trend a bit, and you mentioned the consolidations or mergers, more human services, just based on the fact of what they do. So you've kind of seen that trend there where that's actually happened to cover a large area. We've just had a massive merger for Feed More Western New York. So just two, Meals on Wheels just coming together and just so they can kind of cover and make a larger impact. So we've seen some of those things. I think it's better when you go, when the funders see it from that side. And, you know, is it direct? Is it immediate? You know, what is the long-term sustainability of that? Are you a stronger organization, you know, once that either merger or consolidation or partnership has happened? So I think it's more invitation and advantageous and proactive if it goes from that side. But again, you have no choice if, you know, it's coming from the funder side.
I was part of some of these. We're a slightly smaller community here. We live here in York, Pennsylvania, which is somewhat of a almost like a very similar to your Rust Belt sort of cities that you guys might identify with. But some of it is the narrative that sort of plays out, the story that we sort of tell in some of these cases. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense to the donor. Mm. Because this is sort of what my observation was, is that especially if it's older money, as you were describing, the money that that is available, for example, in a city like Buffalo, if it's older money, that's money that oftentimes is very corporate tied, and it's tied to traditions, and it's also tied, if you think about it, to corporations that have sort of weathered the ups and downs of difficult times. Mm-hmm. And so the way in which they accumulated that wealth is very similar. Similarly, the way that they want to perhaps spend that wealth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. I think there's a cultural and experiential aspect to how that's driven on the funder side, especially if they've weathered a lot of economic headwinds. So I completely agree with that. That makes a lot of sense.
Do you think fundraisers, so the guy or the gal in your seat, are we in positions to facilitate these conversations, or do you think we're having to, like in the case in what you're observing, you know, do we have to rely on the boss or the boards of the bosses to necessarily initiate these ideas? Mm.
I think it's, and maybe I'm more of an optimist. I think the traditional answer would be, it needs to be led, from your board and from, your CEO, executive director. And what you hope you have in that seat is someone who is heavily involved in the development side as they should be. You know, but I also think that, you know, if you have some concrete, concrete ideas, I think managing up is valuable. Having, you know, strong relationship, knowing who you can go to. I think one of the easiest things to say is like, who's your, you know, biggest donor and can you get them to buy into something? And then from there, you know, it's almost like a snowball effect, right? You know, you see that your biggest donors are involved. You know, I think your leadership could see that, you know, outside of hopefully any operational challenges you may have and say, this is probably the direction we can go. This is how we can kind of, you know, expand our mission and get other folks involved. You know, especially for an area like Western New York and you know, Yorktown, I think one of the things we always try to do, and regardless of that kind of older money, is kind of, you know, having a challenge of believing we're worthy of more of, you know, we are large enough to kind of attract maybe some of those folks we haven't attracted in the past. And I think that's a kind of a bit of a friction there. Does that make sense?
It does. Am I hearing? Okay. So there's two ways to look at this. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm sort of piecing together in between the lines is the idea that perhaps this is actually something that any fundraising professional sort of ought to have in their toolbox, is the idea of sort of knowing how to facilitate collaborative and innovative sort of initiatives, and not necessarily being something that we would pull together in a moment of desperation in order to close a gift. And is that what I'm hearing?
I think so. I think it's good for your organization to have that on their resume, that we have the ability and kind of tenure or experience and being really successful at collaborative initiatives, that we are able to pool funding together. It shows, you know, maybe some donors that have maybe not have paid attention to your mission in the past that, hey, not only do we touch on what you care about or what, you know, your organization's missions or that foundation mission is or corporate mission is, we've been able to do this. And now we have some measurable sort of, impact things here. So I think that's something that if, you know, your nonprofit doesn't have yet, I think from a development perspective, I think that needs to be on your resume. Yeah, absolutely.
So if we're 5 years down the road and we've done all this consolidating, we've done the collaborating, the pandemic's come and gone, where do you see all this 5 years down the road?
I really see us, you know, that's a tough one, but I see that that's going to happen. And I'm hoping to see is that, you know, you don't have that sort of unfortunate downturn. And what I mean by that is we had these sort of great big ideas. There were dollars spent, you know, there's this sort of collaboration, partnership happening, and we didn't move the needle. Right. So I'm hoping that's not what's going to happen. I'm hoping that there's going to be lessons learned from an emergency management perspective. You know, how well do, you know, your public officials work with your nonprofits? And are there deeper relationships with the kind of, you know, corporations that are local? And, you know, have we been able to truly, you know, serve our communities? You know, and grow them. Like there's a lot of issues that have come from COVID right now, right? You're seeing inner city, you know, youth, that are, and rural youth that are kind of in these broadband deserts, right? We rely so heavily on schools, and I'm just talking because of the why and what our mission is and things like that.
Sure.
Right. But these are community issues that are coming to the surface. Right. And those are the things we're seeing. And, you know, if there are sort of initiatives that are going to answer that or how can we be more efficient at serving populations with food deserts and insecurity, you know, those are some of the things that I'm hoping that we see that, you know, we've been able to move the needle on long term, you know. So even from healthcare, what are the issues that have come from COVID that we can learn from and that nonprofits can learn from, right? The special needs community, right? Their schedules have been disrupted, right? For certain families and things like that, that's been a challenge for them during this sort of stay at home sort of experience. How do we address that long term? And what does that look like 5 years or 10 years from now? You know, that's a really good question.
Yeah. So some of the things that with some of the other guests that we've been talking about in the context of sort of the COVID effect and sort of where fundraising is going, do you think fundraising is going to be better for all this? So regardless of whether we're talking about the YMCA or we're talking about the local, you know, university, the advancement shop at the university or even the mom and shop, you know, rescue mission or something. Mm-hmm. Do you think fundraising is going to be better for all this in 5 years, even on the other side of whatever collaboration and consolidation that we do?
Yeah. I'll be honest. I think, you know, either when you have pressure, right, either you focus or you fold. And I think the folks in development who kind of excel through this sort of moment will be the folks that'll be able to kind of leave some foundational lessons for us, right? We have our sort of fundamentals that we're relying on currently. We're constantly contacting our donors. We found ways to speak to them, you know, whether it's through Zoom or just phone calls, letters, those sort of things. So even how efficient have we become with our stewardship, you know, have we learned some lessons on how to be more collaborative? So I think there's going to be new sort of wrinkles within what you mentioned earlier, our toolkit, that'll be added. And hopefully those will be things that people will be able to go to, if there's another unfortunate situation like this pandemic or, you know, think of how much we've learned, probably from situations like Hurricane Katrina, 9/11, right? The economic downturn and recession of 2008. And really, we've looked to those sort of leaders that have been through that experience. We've been, you know, I've had colleagues who were in capital campaigns during 2008 and still were able to succeed. And how did they do that? So there'll definitely be lessons learned from this, and we certainly will be better off, you know, as a profession, based on this experience.
Yeah, I've had a number of guests talk about donors. So if you think about, and I'm sure you've been in this seat, and we've all been in this seat where you can't get donors to call you back. But one of the things that I remember somebody telling me a couple of months ago when we were sort of beginning to process the realities of all this, mm-hmm. was that donors were calling them back.
Mm. Yeah.
And I've repeatedly sort of come back to the idea that perhaps some of the outcomes of all this, you know, and I don't want to sound cliche, but the idea of sort of getting back to basics, I think fundraising actually was probably doing some really good work when the telephone, for example, mm-hmm. was a really primary tool.
Right.
And I don't know when we might say that was, but let's say that, for example, that was a big thing. Let's say fundraising had matured to where it needed to, say, in the late 90s, and the telephone was still a very primary tool as opposed to the internet. Mm. And I tend to wonder if now we're going to see that.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be picking up the phone more, right. having more meaningful conversations, perhaps not rushing to the lunch table.
Right.
And then when things like collaboration or consolidate, you know, when any of these innovative ideas sort of come up,
right.
are we going to be better prepared? Somebody said to me the other day, and I think Zoom is in many ways just an extension of the telephone,
right. yeah.
with the benefit of a face. But when we actually get to the lunch table to have some of these collaborative conversations, mm-hmm. will we have sort of teed them up better?
Mm. I think we're definitely going to be learning to be more thoughtful, definitely more concise, coming to the uh-huh. table with, you're right, a more put together idea or thought. Right. What's unique about this pandemic is actually everyone really has had to stop, right? So your phone calls, you know, aren't like, hey, I'm just trying to get your attention. I'm trying to get your attention, you know, or I'm trying to get your attention uh-huh. at this lunch. It's like, hey, I'm great. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad you're doing well. Here's something that we really have that we've really thought about. You can really spend your time. And I think not only, you know, you mentioned donors calling you back, and I think everyone's really understood the value or we've been reminded of the value of communication, right? Of you know, building a rapport. You know, so that, I think that's what's unique about this situation, certainly.
But there's also that human, and I think I sort of hear this every time I hear this idea the donors are calling me back, is that there's a human desire to remain connected. Mm-hmm. But there's also not, somebody said to me recently, and I don't think this was a podcast guest, but there wasn't the fear and hesitation or the avoidance that you typically anticipate with that telephone conversation. You know, mm-hmm. we on the fundraising side generally assume that there's some sort of a tendency for the donor mm-hmm. to sort of avoid that conversation for fear that we're going to ask for money.
Right.
But I think some of that guard, mm-hmm. I think perhaps some of that guard has been sort of lowered.
Right.
Or maybe we're just more, maybe the donor is more sensitive and aware to the fact that, yes, asking is part of the deal. Mm-hmm. But human connection is also just as important at this right. point for me.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have a meaningful mm-hmm. conversation with this guy.
I think there's two things there. I think our profession has gotten better about being more direct about what the role is for our volunteers, board members, and donors. And so I think we've gotten more clear with that. And so as we've gotten yeah. more clear with that, I think it was the other part of that, and on the second side of that is what this sort of pandemic is the first thing we did is when we did have some conversations, right, is we asked them how they were. Are you safe? How are you?
Yeah.
So I think there's some things that I don't necessarily think we've forgotten, but maybe we've been more, and I think this is a lesson for us to kind of go about. And for those of us who, you know, maybe need to improve on our stewardship is how many of those calls are we doing? And how many more of those calls should we be doing going forward? We're so concerned now, but we don't want to waste their time. You know, we know how busy our donors are, our board members, our trustees. How can we find a way to do more of that? Like say, hey, how are you? How are you doing? How's the family? Think about how many, and I'm sure there's many professionals out there, how many meaningful conversations you've had in the last 3 months. I know more about my, you know, which I'm lucky enough, this has been an opportunity for me being with the Y for, you know, less than a year, but I've gotten to know my, you know, donors and board members way more than I would have probably if we hadn't slowed down. You know, I can talk, you know, talk to them about what their kids are up to, where they've been traveling. So many more different conversations that don't necessarily surround money. Which, by the way, for us, has actually resulted in larger gifts, or direct gifts to respond to an emergency without us asking.
Of course it has. Yeah.
So it's, I think there's some lessons there for us.
So I've been working on my second book, and there's this idea that, there's a guy he's actually in the Silicon Valley. He doesn't even talk to, he's at Deloitte, and he generally talks to corporations. He's not talking to fundraising professionals. Mm-hmm. But what Hegel talks about is this idea that we're going to move away from this sort of this very predictable posture, mm-hmm. and we're going to move towards a world where we're going to have to, in my mind, we're going to have to behave more like explorers mm-hmm. rather than those who sort of know the predictable outcomes.
Right.
Of sort of the path that we're going on. So even when we pick up the phone, and I sort of hear this in what you're describing mm-hmm. there, I think the explorer, so imagine yourself as an explorer being dropped down into the jungle.
Right.
You know you're going to find something, but you don't know what you're actually going to find.
Yes.
You really don't know how you're going to get there, mm-hmm. but you know there's something there.
Yeah.
And I think, and this guy, again, this guy's talking to like the tech world, and he's saying that our society is so connected, but so complex, but also so unpredictable, and things are so uncertain that we're going to have to develop this sort of this new intuition, but also this new understanding of what our roles are. Mm. And I keep thinking that for so long, fundraising has been so predictable.
Right.
You know, if I give Mario a name, I assume he can get to a gift on the other side of that. And I don't know that we're not assured of that anymore. Mm-hmm. And then to loop this back, you kind of warmed me up here. to loop this back to where you started, mm-hmm. you know, that collaborative consolidation conversation becomes part of that, perhaps that exploring that you do when you're out there in that jungle,
right.
and you find that donor who happens to be interested. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that's the opportunity, right? You know, especially if you have someone who's been with your organization for a long time, as a donor, a volunteer, or someone who's new, right? And they know it, right? They get it, what your mission is about. They understand that you're going to need unrestricted dollars. They understand that you're going to need dollars for programming, right? So they understand those foundation things. But by the way, we have this idea. Here's something new. Here's what we're looking to do that not only still speaks to our mission or reinforce. So that's the conversation, right, that you're starting to have. I've had a couple of those conversations with board members, right? I'm saying, hey, we've reached out to this nonprofit to talk about the international community or immigrant community we have on the west side of Buffalo. And we're seeing what they're up to. We think there's a way for us to start to, you know, support that community in some way. And that sparked a deeper conversation. I got to understand what their connection is to that population, right? But it's collaborative, right? There's a big idea there. And maybe we're not bringing enough big ideas to our donors. We're bringing them what our mission is, and that's what they care about. But what is that big idea? You asked me what the big idea was, and now we're having this sort of deep conversation about that, right? So maybe we're not bringing enough big ideas to our donors.
So before I let you go, here's the question. Do we as fundraisers today, differently than perhaps in 2008 or after September 11th, are we more confident? So, and we get dropped down into that jungle and we've got the posture of an explorer and we perhaps know that there's collaborative opportunities out there. Are we more confident? Because I think this is perhaps what I've heard throughout this conversation. Are we more confident today that there's opportunities out there, even though we can't see and know exactly what they necessarily are?
My answer to that would be yes, because we've done enough. I think as fundraisers, we know the playing field maybe better than our donors because we know our community. Right. So, I think it's going to be up to us and be confident in knowing what that field is on how to really bring some big ideas to donors, to our, corporate partners, that really make an impact or something transformative.
Yeah. I think there's an optimism that I've sort of picked up on. I haven't used that word with any of my previous guests, but it may be this conversation. I think there's an optimism in the midst of sort of this, which is perhaps what some of the silver lining in all this is. Mm-hmm. Is that we're perhaps a little more optimistic about where the future of this is, differently than, say, where we would have been. And I wasn't doing podcast guesting, back in 2008.
Right.
But I think there's just an optimism that's more real and more experienced and felt.
Yeah. I think, any first reaction is, we have to pause. Our donors can't support us. They're the worst thing. We don't think we can find any new money. And I don't think that's the mindset that we're having during these challenges anymore. I think we have lessons, that we've learned from certain moments. And I think the foundation of that is when a crisis happens or something like this pandemic happens, we need to understand that people do come together in whatever manner that is. And that's why donors are calling you back,
Yeah. Mario, if somebody's listening to our conversation today, they know how to find me, but they want to know how to find you. They want to follow up on something that you said, want to keep the conversation going. How would you suggest that they do that?
Absolutely. Look me up on LinkedIn. Mario Hicks, I'd be happy to have a conversation with anyone that wants to have a conversation.
Super. Mario, it's certainly been a pleasure to have you on the show. You're always welcome back. All you need is a big idea or bold opinion. Thank you for being my guest this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate it. This was fantastic. Thank you again.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.